My name is Jocelyn Fenstermacher. I am 46, I think. That's actually pretty funny. The date is Tuesday, December 8th, 2020. I'm outside of Terlingua, Texas. The name of my interview partner is Amber Harrison, and she is a friend and a colleague of mine.
Okay. My name is Amber Harrison. I am 43. Today is Tuesday, December 8th, 2020. I am also just outside of Terlingua, Texas in the Christmas Mountains. And I'm interviewing Jocelyn Fenstermacher, who is also a friend and colleague.
All right. So we'll get started. So Amber, we live in this place called the Big Bend. How would you describe this area to someone who's never been here?
I guess I'm just going to go with what my initial impression was. And that is that it is pretty vast, very wide open, remote. It is fairly isolated, not like an island, but A little bit scary, a little unassuming, but a little dangerous and unpredictable as well. So it's pretty impressive.
Yeah. And what do you do for work here? Since most people aren't originally from here, why did you come? Why did you stick around?
Yeah. So prior to me coming here, I'm an archaeologist by training. I was living with my partner, Tim, in Tucson, Arizona, and we were both working in cultural resource management and the private sector. And he had been coming out to the Big Bend doing archaeology years before we met, and he loved it, and he always talked about it, and always said that if he could work here and land here permanently, then he would love to do that. And the time came, and a job opened with Big Bend Ranch State Park. And he applied for and got the job as our park archaeologist. So it was kind of like, well, I was looking to get out of cultural resource management. I don't really want to stay in that. It's kind of cutthroat. And was looking for change. And I said, if I can make it work, then I will come if you get the job. He got the job. We actually came here for 2 days during his interview. So I had never been to the Big Bend. I didn't know anything about the Big Bend, nothing. Spent a day in Alpine, spent a day in Terlingua, and then spent a day in the state park. And that was it. And he got the job. And about 2 months later, I moved to Alpine and started a new adventure in the Big Bend. So I didn't really plan it. It was definitely not planned. How about you?
Well, but why did you stick around?
Because he got the job, and I really liked it. I mean, I liked it, obviously, from the second that I saw it. I hadn't been here. We went to the Alpine, and I remember one of the first things when we went to Alpine, we stayed with some friends, and we went to a little like farmer's market, and it was gave me this sense of a community that I thought I wanted, and I think I was looking for, but I wasn't sure what I was looking for, but I know that I wanted a community. And I felt that immediately there. And then when I came down to Terlingua for the day, and just all of the people that I met in that short amount of time, it just felt right. It felt really good, aside from, you know, having my partner be here and that being the real reason. Obviously, I felt really good here. I stuck around, and that sort of love for the area just grew, and the original feeling that I had about the community and about what I thought I maybe was looking for just grew over time into to what it is today, I guess 8 years later almost. So yeah, I stuck around for a whole bunch of reasons.
Cool.
How about you?
That kind of similar for to me. I mean, I had planned to come here, so I'm a field biologist by training, but also kind of always just an educator. And I came out originally to volunteer in the national park, in Big Bend National Park. And I had been traveling, and I basically just didn't want to live at home looking for a job. And I knew that parks needed volunteers. And so I had tried to come out before, and it just seemed an easy way to kind of get out of my parents' house and go to a place that looked really interesting and intriguing. I had been looking, I like isolated and remote places, and so this definitely fit the bill. And I'd seen some pictures somewhere, and it just looked pretty awesome. So came out as a volunteer in kind of a remote part of the park, and and just fell in love with the land. And I kind of got in with a really awesome cohort of people in the park. And it was kind of that same, I didn't really, I think, put a name on it at the time, that feeling of community, but looking back in retrospect, that's absolutely, you know, what it was. I lived in the same place forever growing up, but there wasn't really a community there. It was just in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. And, just, it was very, felt very transient, even though we lived in one place. I had lots of different friends at different times. And I'd been moving around a lot for work after college. And so just from that first experience, I just fell in love with the area, and there were some pretty awesome people. And I just kept trying to stay and come back. All my work jobs were seasonal to begin with. I had to leave because there were no work. And then I got hired back temporarily, and then I had to leave again, and then was able to find a job again in the park. So I kind of worked on and off seasonally in the park for a long time. And then that developed into getting a master's degree at Sol Ross, which is the university in Alpine, north of the park, a town north of the park.
Gotcha.
Hey, I'm sorry. Somebody is knocking on my door unexpectedly. So can we pause this for a quick sec?
Yep. Okay. So, yeah, so I just was kind of trying to string together seasonal jobs in the park, just trying to find ways to stick around because I love the area. And then was able to get a really neat project for a master's degree at the local university, which kept me sticking around for a while, which was great. And then I took some work that took me elsewhere. Tourism guiding in other places in the world, but I was always coming back home to here, and then was finally able to buy land and property and make it real. So yeah, it was just sort of that feeling of the land really captured me, and the spirit of the people. I didn't really have a sense of place growing up, and I definitely found that here from the land and the people. And it, I don't know, this place just, it's like your demons, you know, we're talking about, you know, how would you describe this place? And, big, vast, it makes some people uncomfortable because you just can't hide, you know, the geology, everything is on display. I say that, you know, if you're running from something, which people often are when they come out here trying to discover or find a new life, you know, your demons will still follow you, and they'll either take you down or you work with them and you overcome. But you can't really hide here. And I think that's what makes it wonderful and also scary and challenging. And I feel the most of who I can be here. Like just that freedom of being able to find your own sort of path and place, and which, you know, sometimes it's scary. It's pretty awesome. So that's why I came to work in the park, and I've stuck around because of the park and the land and the people, and it's just an amazing place. But the community is a big part of it for sure. So that kind of that theme of community becoming really important, even in this really big, vast space, is kind of an interesting thing. Our communities here are very widespread, far apart. People who decide to be out here generally are individualists, often hermits, or just sort of pride themselves on being independent. But how does that, I don't know, how does that work for you, that concept of community and all that independence in this big space? How do you put that together, Amber, for yourself anyway?
I think one of the reasons why we feel connected as a community here is because regardless of politics or social status or economics or any of those things, the reality of the landscape out here, the reality of the challenge of being so far away, just the sheer challenge of living out here, because of the landscape, because of the vastness and the distance. I think that is what brings these communities together, because we have shared experience through just the simple act of surviving and being out here. So I think that is how, for me, sort of the community is interconnected with the landscape, I think, here. And so I think that's why, because I can't think of any other place where I've been where there is just that overarching shared experience that is tied to our physical place. I had lived in Las Vegas. I lived in Tucson, Arizona, and populated, large cities. And there were little pockets of community, but I didn't feel ever like those were necessarily shared through everybody. But here, we all have that shared experience of being in this vast, remote, strange place, that we do it by choice. That whether our choice is, has to do with the landscape, or we're trying to get away from populations, urban centers, or running from our problems, whatever it is, we are now all here in this place. We all have to do an hour plus drive to go to the doctor. We all have to do, at least an hour to go to a grocery store. We all have these shared things that we kind of come together over. When somebody in the community is struggling, we understand what it's like to struggle out here. Regardless of all of the other things, we chip in and help each other because we all understand what we're doing on some level. Does that make sense? So I think, it's the whole geography, the whole uniqueness about this place. Really kind of translates into the community and how we work together.
That's a good point.
Let's see.
Yeah, I would agree. That kind of that idea of the intentionalness of us all being here. I mean, I guess some people show up and they just get stuck, for one reason or the other, but essentially it's an intentional community. Even though there could be a lot of different reasons why people come, you're right, that sort of the overarching survival landscape level does really connect us, even though it's so vast. But with the communities being really widespread, it can be hard to feel connected. I mean, we have our little community Interlingua, but the overall Big Bend, I mean, it's a beautiful landscape anywhere where you go here, whether it's the national park, the state park up north in the Davis Mountains, the Marfa grasslands. I mean, the whole area is beautiful for a variety of reasons, and has drawn people, I think, for that. But I think overall that sense of the land, people have come out here for intentional reasons and settled in these sort of vast areas. And that land and the landscape is what kind of connects all of us. And so I think everybody at some fundamental level cares about the land and the landscape, because that's what plays into why we've come. And it can be a rallying point. This group that we're involved in, the Big Bend Conservation Alliance, was created essentially based on that premise that people would rally together essentially around the land, because there was this threat to the land and the landscape, and even in kind of our ways of life as well, with this pipeline project coming in and affecting the land and maybe affecting the economy and sorts of things. And so we wanted to create a way for everybody in the region to kind of come together around the same table, recognizing that, you know, there's lots of different points of view, but maybe we could all come together around the idea of wanting to protect this land that we all love so much. And that's why we're here.
When did you get involved with the Conservation Alliance or BBCA?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much right when it started. You know, we'd heard about potential fracking happening outside of Marfa, which, you know, basically that's like a Permian Basin sort of north. You know, energy industry is really big up around Midland, but it just hadn't permeated this area. We were sort of where all the pipelines ended. There wasn't any active oil and gas activity. This is all just sort of pristine ranch land, national state. Parks, just preserved areas. And so that was a big deal to have this big industrial threat, essentially. Even though the fracking didn't really turn into anything, then the next thing was a pipeline project, which, you know, was equally or maybe even more scary. And so we tried to start doing some research to figure out more about it, and decided that, you know, if we wanted people to kind of come together from different sides, from different perspectives, because obviously there's, you know, pro oil and gas, a lot of people make their money in that world. And then there's some people who are, you know, no pipeline, no how, nowhere, ever. We're just going to ride bikes forever. I mean, there's a huge diversity of opinions and perspectives, but again, you know, if our drinking water or water for ranch land and cattle, is under threat, we just thought that everybody should be able to come together somehow around the same table, regardless of political opinions or whatever. So we wanted to create an organization that took away any of the complexities of alignment, you know, with Sierra Club maybe, or Nature Conservancy or greenie organizations, or, you know, we were not to demonize anybody or elevate or celebrate anything. It was just about the community and what was the community voice. And we wanted to create an avenue and a voice for people to be able to speak. Cause we all know that lots of small little voices in isolated areas don't have a lot of power. And so if we could all come together, we felt that we could create a more powerful voice that way. So yeah, so that was it. So that was really the first time I had gotten involved in sort of a community advocacy effort. I had loved being in the community in Big Bend and loved being part of the park, but that was real specific to the park and working with visitors and helping people enjoy their visit to the national park. But I didn't grow up, you know, being aware of having a mayor of the area that I lived in. Like, I don't even know if there must have been a city council, completely unaware of anything like that. But, you know, when you get into a smaller area, you know, I learned about how the park was governed. And then when I was living in Alpine, you know, much more aware, obviously, of the mayor and city council and stuff. But I just hadn't ever been involved in any kind of community advocacy or just sort of awareness or standing up for our community. And so through this whole process, it started off, you know, with this pipeline response, but is growing into a bigger way to sort of just advocate for ourselves as a community. A friend of mine said during the pipeline area, you know, a lot of people leave, you know, you go elsewhere where there's maybe, you know, not having the same problems, you can run from your problems. But man, if you love the place that you're in and you're tied to it, you know, how can you run away? You have to stand and you have to try to protect what you love. So that's what we try to do. Yeah. So what about you? When did you first kind of get involved in the community or feel moved to become an advocate here as opposed to just enjoy the community for what it was?
I think it kind of slowly happened for me when I was first hired with the park, Big Bend Ranch. I was hired on as a trails technician, and I, you know, slowly started to get sort of recognized as Ranger Harrison. I'm the park ranger. So, you know, I'd go to work, I'd help visitors, I had my identity in the park, and that's how people recognized me. And then I would go into the community, and then people in the community would recognize me as a park ranger and associate me with the park. And then I changed from the trails position to the park interpreter. And as the park interpreter, a big part of my job is to do public outreach and education. Along with that transition, I moved from way up in the interior to the Barton Warmoth Visitor Center, which is close to Terlingua. I moved to Terlingua, so I was in the community a lot. And then I started doing, you know, outreach and education programs in the community, and people just started to recognize me as the ranger. You know, they would always and still do, you know, want to talk about the park, want to talk about issues, all of those sorts of things. And it just got me, it kind of raised my awareness more about the fact that I'm now like this ranger that people know and come to for Zoom's knowledge about certain things, you know, whether it be the cultural resources or the natural resources or whatever. That identity sort of started to develop, and I got to know the community a little bit more. And so there's an organization in Terlingua called the Big Bend Citizens Alliance, very small organization. It's an advocacy group. We have, it's a 501c3. We have the Terlingua Community Garden, which you've been involved with, you know about. And then Terlingua Cares, which is a fund that helps, you know, folks in need. We do food banks and those sorts of things. There is another sort of arm of the organization that takes care of the ball field over near the school so that the kids have a place to play baseball, and we have a nice community center over there. So it was just a way to get sort of involved in other aspects. And so I got involved with that group. I became the vice president of Big Bend Citizens Alliance and still am today. That was back in 2015. And just kind of kept that momentum going. And then started under BBC, little BBCA, started a Dark Sky Alliance. And as part of my job, as part of my interpretive job at the park, I've become very involved in the Dark Sky initiative. And so just through all of that, I have started to get much more involved. I think really starting with the Dark Sky initiative that I did in the park in 2017, I did.
Yeah, tell me more about that.
Yeah, so in 2017, probably in 2016, I went to do a training at the McDonald Observatory just for some basic astronomy programs, like how to do night sky programs, how to do, you know, basic astronomy. I wasn't really too excited about that so much, but what I did learn about, which I'm sort of embarrassed to admit, I didn't realize it was a problem, but light pollution. And so we had this whole section in the training on light pollution, and it exposed me to all of the negative consequences of too much artificial light and proper use of artificial light. And so I decided to apply to the International Dark Sky Association to get Big Bend Ranch designated as an international dark sky park. The national park was already had that designation for 10 years prior. And I got back from the training and I learned about this light pollution thing. Also, I learned about this dark sky program where we could get the park designated. And I was really excited to do that. And I spent the following year filling out the application, working on the application. It's pretty detailed, pretty intensive. And took me a year, but we got the park designated in October of 2017 as an international dark sky park. But as part of that process, and part of the requirement of upholding the designation is that we have to do continued public outreach and education and sky quality monitoring of the park. So a big part of one of the things that really got me out into the community was doing the public outreach and education regarding the Dark Sky Initiative. And that kind of that identity that I said I was starting to develop as sort of park ranger and interpreter, but also member of the community, archaeologist, resource manager, those sorts of things all sort of now come together.
Now you're the dark sky lady.
And now I'm the dark sky lady. I am the we've held a series of workshops in the community and talks, and we've done, we've partnered with the National Park and we've done some public presentations and star parties and those sorts of things. And I'm the person that if somebody's having a problem with their neighbor's lights, I'm usually the person that they call, and then I figure out how to help them from there. But that's also how I got involved with BIG BBCA, so the Conservation Alliance. A very good friend of mine, Matt Lara, was the previous acting executive director, and he was also a very good friend. And so when I started getting into the Dark Sky initiative down here, he had been very involved with the Hill Country Dark Sky initiative, which has been extremely successful. So he connected me with folks like Bill Wren from the McDonald Observatory and Cindy Luongo Smith from the Texas chapter of the IDA and other folks from the IDA. And we started actually doing public presentations and outreach together with Bill and BBCA and just partnering, really utilizing that dark sky interest, the interest in the dark sky preservation and conservation that we've done is huge. Everybody wants to be involved. Everybody's invested. It's incredible. I just kind of went from there, and that's how I ended up getting introduced to BBCA and then joined the board last year, I think, middle of the year, as sort of the dark sky specialist on that board. And now that has kind of blossomed out of this one little training that I went to that I wasn't sure what I would get out of. And now this is who I am.
I know you said to me before, once you did that training, it was so powerful because you just couldn't unsee that light pollution that all of a sudden, obviously it had been around, but once you were aware of it, it just was everywhere. You couldn't ignore it anymore. So I'm sure, I know that you bring that passion to your educational opportunities. How has all that deepened your relationship to the community? Like, have more things come up, because of, you're saying that, if somebody has a problem with their neighbor's lights. But there was another really cool thing that happened down here with the cell phone tower. How did that
play out? Really, really interesting, fun things have happened. that really sort of underscore what we were saying earlier about the community being connected kind of through the landscape and the resources. And so in 2018, there was a proposal from a cell tower company to put up these two cell towers, basically one in Scutey Butte and one just on the other side of the coast town in Terlingua, right next to the historic district there. And they kind of put out the public notices in a very sly way, which is common when companies want to do something that may impact the landscape or the resources of a place. So it was brought to my attention that there were a couple of public notices in the Big Bend Gazette that had some really vague language about two cell towers that were going to basically bookend the Terlingua community. And of course, I just kind of dug into that public notice. Like I said, it was really light on details, didn't really know what it meant and what was going on, but it was through the FTC. And they were requesting environmental reviews for the construction of these towers. So I kind of waded through all the jargon and figured out what we needed. It was a fairly cumbersome process, but in the end, what I ended up doing was getting the community involved in not necessarily an effort to not have the towers, because arguably the towers do give us added communication, abilities and does help with quality of life out here in some ways, but to get them lowered. So they were proposed to be over 270 feet per FAA FCC regulations. If they're over 270, they have to have white lights, they have to have lighting. And that's what we were concerned about, because of that lighting at night would be, definitely damage the nightscape and the nocturnal environment.
Which people love for fun, but tourism has been really dependent on dark skies and
exactly.
Just quality of life, but also economic benefit and just sort of historic nature of the area for so all of those reasons.
There are 10 minutes left, okay?
What's that?
10 minutes left.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so if you can imagine a gateway community to significant parks and national parks and state parks, and somebody proposes to put these very tall towers up with lights. The economy here is driven on tourism, astrotourism, ecotourism. That's why people come here. And so basically we just kind of rallied the community. And in the end, we had, I think, something like 89 letters written to the FCC requesting an environmental review. They, to my knowledge, said that was one of the most sincerest outcries of change that they had seen. So what that resulted in was a lot of pressure, and they ended up pulling their registration request to the FCC and rather put in a tower that was under 200 feet, which did not then require the lighting. So it was actually, in the end, it was a compromise. And
yeah, it was a pretty amazing result. I mean, for the small community of, a few hundred people, to have that many people feel moved to write in. I mean, we're all pretty individual and we'll turn out for a fundraiser if somebody has a medical problem. But for that many people to rally around one particular thing was pretty awesome.
It was a pretty
win-win.
It took us about 3 weeks. Then we got, I remember getting an email from a local reporter saying, hey, this is the headline, towers reduced. I originally thought they were going to scrap the towers altogether. And, it just turned out to be a really good compromise.
Yeah, I know. It was awesome. The power of the people, which happens here as well. You'd mentioned that, the Terlingua Cares, of a way to help people in need. That's kind of another cool community thing that happens as well. How did you get the idea for that? Because you were behind that.
So I mentioned the Big Bend Citizens Alliance as part of that, there's a little branch called Turling Wood Cares, and they you know, help people in need in the community. And when the COVID pandemic started, we got the idea to, like, we have this organization that already exists. We're already helping the community. Like, I feel like we should be doing something to support people in need due to the pandemic and job loss and those sorts of things. So I reached out to our organization president, and it was just like, we should do something. And she was the one who actually took that ball and ran with it. And, yeah. You know, by May, we had raised something like $73,000 in a very short amount of time. And we were able to help a lot of people. Unfortunately, we weren't able to keep that going because it ended. And it was a really time-consuming effort. But it was a fantastic show of community support. It was phenomenal.
Yeah, but even still, I mean, that's, I guess what I'm getting at is that it's, you know, we have these, you know, vast sort of like spread out communities, but still there's a way for people to come together over commonly held sort of goals, whether it's, you know, realizing night skies are important or realizing we're all in this together. So let's help each other when we're in need. I know the other kind of towns in the area came together with similar kind of help the locals efforts during the early parts of the pandemic. So I don't know. I think it's awesome, the power of community, and for people to kind of come together and harness that desire or the awareness that we're all in it together. And if we do kind of join together, we can have a stronger voice. Whether it's little BBCA, the Citizens Alliance advocating, you know, for a small community with a, you know, try to keep a garden going, and food bank and the ball field, but the Big Bend Conservation Alliance, big BBCA, working for the whole region, you know, trying to advocate for the natural cultural resources and the way of life, you know, ranching heritage, land stewardship, trying to sort of advocate for ourselves and the community so we can make choices about our future rather than having it imposed upon us. So I know that you've said advocacy is sort of like problem solving. Do you see major problems for our area coming up, or how do you see kind of the future of our communities or the area?
5 minutes left.
Okay. So I do think that we suffer, that we have a lot of threats. There's some pretty unmitigated development happening. There's just a lot. Our visitorship, tourism is fantastic. That's why we're here, but it is off the charts. And so one of the hard things in this vast community is that there's not a lot of oversight. So us as community members have to organize and find ways to remedy some of these potential problems and work together. The beautiful thing is that I think that we all, whether you're somebody that's developing or somebody that's trying to limit development, we all are doing these things for the same reasons. We just have to understand how to fold all of that together so that we can compromise. I think compromising is the best. And we have to realize that there are some things that we just can't undo. So working together through the BBCAs, through other organizations, I think partnerships and rallying around the environment and rallying around the landscape and the dark skies and all of those things from the bottom up is really the only way to do that. Being unincorporated out here in Terlingua, we're not gonna have anybody who's gonna start to drive. So that has to be us.
For sure. I agree. Power and community, we've got to come together for our own voice. But it's not just to solve a problem, although that's a big part of it. I don't know, but the part of community too is energizing. There's that synergy and that feeling of being part of something. I think whether if it's, you know, people don't necessarily talk about that, but I think it's also, it feels good. I think for a lot of people to get involved in something that's bigger than themselves having those voices come together.
Feeds back to the thing that you and I both were searching for when we first started chatting, you know, like first came here, and we didn't realize what we were looking for, But now, as we're growing and we've been in this environment, I think that we're both realizing what we were looking for, and now we can be champions for that for other people who don't maybe know how to do it. You know, so
yeah,
I think it's really cool. So to see how all of these things are interconnected and how they change us and bring us together. That's been my favorite thing about living in the Big Bend.
Awesome. Yeah, developing community. Me too. All right. I think that's the end of us.
I agree.